Hey yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. Once again, I'm Martin, joined by the King of the Casters, Mr. Brett Podcast. And Brett, we have another excellent guest for people today.
That's true. He's a guest that I know we've been looking to have on for a very long time. He is the front man for the Electric Boys, Connie Bloom. Connie, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Great. Happy to be talking to you. I know that it's been quite a while that we've been looking forward to talking to you. So it's nice that you've got the new album coming out, and that one's coming out April 30th, Upside Down.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
It's a very good album. I really enjoyed this one a lot. And
so,
yeah. Tell me, tell us about, putting this one together, because I think this one is a little bit different, especially lyrically.
Yeah, well, times are different. So I guess, that's, I don't know. People ask sometimes where you get inspiration from when you write songs. And I think it's difficult to say, because it's from everywhere. And now it's been a crazy year. So that had something to do with it, obviously. But also we changed one of the members in the band. So we got the guitar player from the third album, Freewheeling, back, which is Martin Tomander. And so that was also a change, which also was really inspiring, But I don't know. I mean, I agree. It is a little bit different from the other albums, and we never set out to do an album like in a particular way. It's usually that we write a lot of songs, and then we get together and listen to all the demos they have done, and then we decide on what songs we like the most, etc. And that is what usually becomes the album. But something was a bit different this time, I guess. It's a little bit harder, a bit more on the edge than the latest one, the previous one, Ghost War Diaries, I think.
Now, go ahead.
No, I'm just wondering. I'm just curious. Does everybody bring then a few songs to the album, and that's how you do it, or do you guys write all together, all the songs all the time?
I've always been the main songwriter, but on this particular album, it was, I think, one of the songs came from the drummer, who's also the drummer and songwriter for the band called The Quill. And then Andy, the bass player, brought in two ideas, I think, that we finished together. So... I take the ideas, I put them down on, do my drum machine, home demos, so we can hear the whole songs, what they sound like, and then we take them to the rehearsal place and arrange them together, and everybody adds their little bit of personality to them.
How many songs did you write for this album then? You said that you usually write a lot, so how many kind of did you wind up demoing?
I actually don't think, did I say I write a lot? I don't know. I don't think I do. I'm quite hard on myself. I come up with an idea, and if I don't think it's like really, really good, then I don't finish it. Simple as that. So, and the songs that get finished, those are the songs that we listen to. And so maybe for this album, maybe we had like four or five more, except for the songs that is on the album, So it's not like, it's like 40, 50 songs or something.
Do you ever intend to actually finish those songs and maybe like release them as bonus tracks in some way?
No. If they're not good enough at that time, or at that point, then I don't think they ever will be. So it's like, no, they go to the garbage can.
So you don't save any concepts or ideas and try to refresh them in a few years and look at them again with new eyes?
Well, I do. I mean, I you know, if I come up with little melodies or guitar riffs or whatever, I record them on the voice memo on the phone. So I got shitloads of ideas like that. And then when it's time to, you know, write songs for an album or whatever, then I go through that and pick some stuff that excites me or excites the other guys, whatever. But yeah, you're right. I mean, some of those ideas, they're still there. I don't erase them. It's just that maybe I don't finish them, but they're there. So, and maybe if I listen to them like in 6 months, then I will hear something that I didn't hear in the first place. So, so there's plenty of little ideas around.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you've got soon to have three singles. So first was Tumble and Dominoes, which might be my favorite song of the album.
It's mine as well.
Yeah. Super God, which is great. And now, and soon it'll be It's Not the End. How do you, like, does Mighty Music choose those? Do you guys choose those? Do you kind of do it in conjunction?
In conjunction, I guess. I mean, we talk about it, but this... As with this album, it's not even been a discussion. I mean, the first one was Super God, and that just felt like it felt like a strong song, but it also sounded like us, you know, had that groove to it or whatever. And then now it's but we talk about it within all of us, with the record company and with the management and the band.
I love the video.
It's a very cool video. How much control do you guys take of the videos? Do you guys take a lot of creative control in the creation of your videos?
Well, yeah. Well, for Super God, the animated one, that was I did all the drawings, and I sent them over to our friend Gustav Kronfeldt, who's a great editor. So he made everything move, and so basically that was just done within him, I mean, between him and me, and also, of course, the band was kept watching and came with up with ideas and stuff. But no, the record company has been really cool with us, and with the previous album as well. I think for me as a songwriter or artist, I think it feels like we have a lot of artistic freedom, so to speak, which is great.
How much time in a week does the Electric Boys take up for you?
Well, it varies. Now it's been like a lot of time, you know. But then when there's not much happening, I've been doing some solo albums and stuff like that. So in between the Electric Boys releases, then obviously I do a lot of other things. But right now, it's the main focus again, because we're releasing the album and there's plenty of work to do.
And of course, you've got you have a Swedish tour booked coming up in the next. I'm not sure when, but
it's in September. It was booked before in May. But we also had the Monsters of Rock cruise, which was at the end of May, and so. It looks like, you know, after the summer is, hopefully, nobody knows.
Yeah,
no, nobody
but,
knows.
But I'm still one of the positive guys. Anyway, I think that as soon as you know, they're vaccinating like crazy over here now, and I just think that when the elderly and the people in the risk, what's it called in English? Risk category.
Yeah, the high risk.
Yeah. When those people had their vaccine, then it shouldn't be considered such a big threat to the society. So I'm assuming, you know, things will start changing.
How much are you looking forward to that very first show?
Very much, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, I love recording. I love writing. It's all part of the whole process. I wouldn't want to lose out on one of them. But at the end of the day, you can't beat, you know, playing live in front of an audience. It's like this weekend we were doing a recording a pay-per-view at a big theater in Stockholm, and the day before that we were doing the video for shooting the video at the, on the same stage with the lights and everything for Tomlin and Domino's. But you know, there's something when we're doing the film and the concert without any people, it's something that's so tiring of doing that for a long time, because we spent the whole day getting, you know, making sure the lights were going to be good, and yes, because it is a pay-per-view, so we want it to be really professional. And when you've done that for a bunch of hours, and it's like really exhausting, because like someone said, it's like you give and give and give, but you get nothing back. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just you pour it all out into an empty room. You know, whereas when you have an audience, there's you feed back from it, and you can you know, on a good night, you. I guess that's why Bruce Springsteen and guys like that play for three hours or 3.5 hours, because of the audience. Otherwise, it would be exhausting.
And of course, your audience, you have some, you know, hardcore fans that have been with you for so many years. What do those longtime fans mean to you?
By everything. And I think there's a potential of so many more, you know, but it's difficult also. I mean, all bands nowadays have the same problem, if that is the right word, but to cut through the whole social media pace, whatever you want to call it. There's so much music and so much talent and everything out there. So it's difficult like that, you know. I mean, when we started, there was basically, if you had a song with a strong chorus or a big guitar riff or whatever, and the video got on MTV, then you could sort of, you know, you knew it was going to be a hit to some extent at least. But nowadays, you can write the best music or whatever, but if you don't know all the channels and how to get it out there, then it won't make any difference. So it's difficult, especially for old farts like us. We gotta make sure we have some people around us that are connected to all that.
It's true. I think I heard that on Spotify, there's something like 4,500 new songs being released every single day. You know,
I mean,
it's great. So many of them aren't ever heard by anybody, and I'm sure so much is good music. But you have those fans, and you have produced such an excellent album that I hope that people help to spread the word with you.
Yeah, for sure. I hope that too. You know, and well, I mean, the way it works for us is the way it's always worked. It's like you release an album and then you go on tour and promote it, and then you start all over again. You know, mm-hmm. That's how it goes.
Well, it's so interesting to me, because I mean, when I think about, you know, way back, I mean, 1989 and like All Lips and Hips, and I mean, I still get that song in my head, like at random points, you know, over the last 30 years for sure. And like, when I think about that, like, and of course, that's still probably your best known song in North America. Is there, do you kind of wish that people would in North America would discover more of your new music?
Yeah, of course. You know, I'm really proud of all the albums that we've done, and I would like people to hear them. Of course.
Is it like a focus, do you think, to try to expand to North America again, or is it just like it'll happen when it happens if it happens?
Well, we had some kind of plan, you know, together with the Monsters of Rock Cruise thing, that we were going to do some shows, and then obviously that didn't happen. So, but since we booked for that, I guess it's going to be in the next year instead. And so hopefully we can do some stuff then.
Mm-hmm.
We're changing the the camp around a little bit with new booking agencies and stuff like that as well. So, well, you know, I still feel positive about it. It certainly is a big project to bring it to America. But, you know, lots of people keep asking, when are you coming to America? I'm like, I'm the first guy to go as long as there's somebody who sets it up, you know.
Yeah.
But there has to be... there has to be a plan and a way to make it work financially, even if we don't really make any money from it. But at least, you know, to be able to go there and don't waste money, you know. I'd love to. I mean, we got such great memories from the tours we did in America, and it'd be lovely. It'd be great to go back.
So do these things like the Monsters of Rock cruise, you know, where you interact so closely with the fans, do you really enjoy that?
I do, actually. I mean, it's like after the show. I mean, before it was, I mean, you did the show and then you went to some bar or whatever. And but nowadays, I keep joking or saying that it's you got two shows in one night. You do the show, the gig, and then you go to the merch stand. And that's the next thing. It's like they go hand in hand, and that's it's a great. I really dig that because you get to talk to fans, and they, you know, you get some input, creative input, and to hear what they thought of the songs or the albums and stuff. So it's a really cool thing. It's a cool hang after every show, you know, where you can do that and get to meet the fans.
That's awesome. You know, I what the fans and getting the feedback from the fans, so much more important than getting the feedback from critics, isn't it?
Of course, yeah. And also one critic is, I mean, it's one person's point of view and taste. And you can't be too bothered about it because it's just somebody's personal taste.
What's it like then, I guess, when you think of the Monsters of Rock, those kind of cruises, also hanging out with the other bands? I mean, I'm sure that in some cases there's people that you haven't seen in a long time. Do you kind of, is it kind of like, oh, wow, like almost like none of the years have passed?
I guess, yeah, I guess it's like that. I mean, I feel I have a lot of friends or, you know, people I know that you don't stay in touch with, you know, all the time. But when you meet, it's all the same, you know. Yeah, it's the same thing, which is cool. But I gotta say, Masters of Rock cruise is a really, really cool event, and the way that you're on the boat and you got all these great bands and fans and everything. And it's all really very Californian, very chilled out, peaceful. It's simply a great, really, really great vibe. And I was really looking forward to this one because over the years we've done, obviously Alice Cooper was one of my childhood heroes. You know, and still is. But you know, when I was 9 years old, the first album I bought myself was the Killer album, and then we've opened up for him a couple of times, both with Electric Voice and with Hanoi Rocks, and he's always been a great guy to us, and we've gotten to know the band and everything. So that, you know, that itself would have been a great thing, just to hang with Ryan Roxy and Chuck and, you know, all these guys. But it's a very cool event. I mean, that if people hear this and haven't been on their boat and like hard rock, you know, hard rock music or whatever, they gotta go.
Yeah, and there's so many great festivals also in Europe for, you know, and that's something that is not so much here in North America. We're in Canada here, the two of us, and you know, there's not an awful lot of those festivals. I mean, we want to just get to Europe and hit them all, you know, over the course of a summer.
Yeah, I was going to ask, actually. So it's you feel it's not so many over there?
Not so many here, no. And not in America either. It's just not it's not part of the culture as much, I think, as it is in Europe.
Okay. The festival scene, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. Like Canada, I mean, I'm sure there is festivals. I know that, but when you think of like the big hard rock festivals, I certainly can't think of anything like that really in North America for myself, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, I mean, I think half the time, anytime anybody thinks of a festival in the U.S., they wind up thinking of the Fyre Festival or something like that, something that, that completely, you know, went tits up and destroyed festivals in North America.
What's the largest crowd you? Oh, sorry. What's the largest crowd you ever played in front of? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, what's the one in the desert in America?
Burning Man.
Burning Man. Yeah.
Yeah.
That seems to be a cool festival.
Well, yeah, it's way more than just music. That's for sure. It's pretty, you know. But it's very, very, very chilled.
A stone event. What?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Very, very chill. Very easygoing, for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what's the largest crowd you ever played in front of?
Maybe when we opened up for Metallica in Stockholm. I don't know how many people that was. I don't know, maybe one of the shows with Mr. Big in America.
Oh, really?
I don't know.
Those are some huge bands you're playing with there, you know. The big stadium with Metallica, I'm sure.
Yeah. But then again, the stadiums here are not as big as the huge... It's not like the biggest places you got in America or Canada, I'm sure.
Maybe no, but I'm wondering, is it when you're on in front of that big an audience, is it a completely different energy than it is when it's a small crowd in a club? And what do you like more? What's the difference between the energy?
It's certainly different, but I like both. I mean, I think we're one of the bands that I've always said that we're an arena band. I mean, the vibe in the band, or the way I look at us, is that we are an arena band. And I mean, a lot of bands, if they get up on a big stage, they can get kind of lost. But we always felt comfortable on the really big stages. But then, I mean, that's more of a production, and you don't have like eye contact with people. It's more like you just performing into the great wide open, so to speak, but it's a great buzz, and because you know there's so many. I mean, obviously it's really important because it's so big and there's a lot of people watching, so you get all hyped up about it, and you know it's a, you know, because it's a big rock show. But then again, the club shows are very cool, because you do interact more with fans, and you know, somebody might shout something and you pick up on that, and you know, play that song, and you might end up playing something that you hadn't planned to play or whatever. So it's two different things. They're both really cool, and I can't say I like one more than the other. They're both great.
So, you know, in your upcoming, when you get a chance to tour and you have an album like Upside Down, which is so strong, has so many cool songs, how many are you planning to play on your set list?
From the new album?
Yeah.
I would say probably 5 or something like that. I mean, enough to promote the new stuff, but then again... It's a good question, because you can never win. There's always, if you play more of the new stuff, then people are gonna say, "I wanted to hear that song" or whatever, some old stuff. And if you play the old stuff, and someone else is gonna say, "You should have played more of the new stuff," you can't win. So, but I think the way we look at it right now, for the time being, and for the shows coming up in September or maybe hopefully earlier, is that because we brought Martin back in into the band. We're also doing, we're thinking about doing 4 or 5 songs from Freewheeling, which is that third album. And we haven't played any of that stuff because there was two other guys in the band at that time. So with the original lineup, after we reformed, they weren't interested in playing any of those songs. It's not like they said they refused, but they weren't interested. So it's kind of, it just never happened. But now because he's back, so that's like an exciting thing to bring up those songs again, because lots of fans have been asking. So I would say if we play a club show over here for an hour and a half or whatever, it'd be 5 of the new songs, 5 from Freewheeling, and the rest a mix of, you know, old singles and stuff, and lots of jamming, because we obviously like to do that as well.
You know, the jamming, you can always hear that influence in your albums too. I think that's part of it. I love, by the way, I love the title Twangin' and Karangin'. Yes. I think that's one of the funnest, that's one of the funnest titles I ever heard.
Yeah, it's just me trying to sound like an electric guitar cranked up in a Marshall, on a Marshall. But yeah.
You mentioned, of course, that you played with Hanoi Rocks. What was that like, and what kind of things did you learn from Michael Monroe?
What did I learn? I don't know. It was obviously it was great. I mean, I got to know the guys in the early 80s. I had a band, and we were touring with them in Finland, opening up for Hanoi. And me and Andy became friends, and he said, we got to play together at some point. So I was expecting it to happen at some point. So when he finally called me, I said, I'll come over to Helsinki and we'll hang out and, you know, look at some ideas and stuff. But Michael, I mean, he's extraordinary. I mean, he's just so all in, you know, 100% all the time. And I keep referring, you know, of that last week when we had decided to put the band down, and we did like a farewell tour of Japan, and then obviously someone said, but that can't be the last thing. I mean, because they're like, what's the word in English? I mean, in Finland, they're huge. I mean,
mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, we gotta go back to Finland and finish off in their home country. So, and the main place in Helsinki is a place called Tavastia, which holds about 800 people, I think. And so we thought, okay, maybe let's do 3 shows at Tavastia as the last gigs. And it ended up being, 8 shows in 6 days, all sold out. So the last two were like, I don't know if you have that, if you say matinee in English, I don't know.
Yep.
That's like the, you do, or?
Yep, matinee, yep.
You have that word, yeah.
Totally.
So that was like in the afternoon for the youngsters, you know, underage. So we did that, and then there was like maybe 3 or 4 hours gap, and then there was the big, the evening show. And the day after, same thing again, and then there was the last show. So Michael was singing, he was doing like singing 8 shows in 6 days. And the very last show, before we went on, they were standing backstage, and Andy and Michael was talking, and then they said, you know, we talked about the set list, and they said, okay, fuck it, let's do all the songs. So it ended up being, well, I don't know, 2.5 or 3 hours, I don't know. It went on for a long time. And as you know, Michael is jumping around, he's climbing up the lighting rig and being crazy, you know, as he is. And but his voice held up, you know, perfectly. So, I mean, I was, that's something I was totally blown away with. I mean, he really is a true professional. And it's not, obviously it's not, he doesn't even like drunk people, you know, he doesn't hang out at night and, you know, he takes care of himself like that. He does the show and drinks a lot of water and eats lots of fruit and fish and shit. And then he goes to sleep pretty much. So I don't know. I don't know what I've learned. I'm just blown away.
It's very hard for hard rock bands to get radio airplay in North America now. What's it like in Sweden and the countries, surrounding countries? Is it easier or hard to? Is it harder or easy to get airplay for you on the radio?
It's difficult because it's in Sweden it's basically two rock radio stations. And one of them plays mainly only old hits. Mm. Yeah, whatever, Pour Some Sugar on Me and old classics. And the other one, they do a lot of contemporary hard rock. But I don't know, it's weird. For some reason, we don't get played on there. The guys that runs it, I mean, I don't know if rancid is the right word, but the guys that are the people who do the talking at the radio station, they're big fans. And we've been up there doing lots of interviews, and we were over there for about a week, and as a funny thing to do, we were like their band for that week, and we're playing acoustic stuff and they were singing along, and it was fun. But it's still, they're sort of niched in a certain style. I don't know. I can't put my finger on it. But I would say, but to answer your question, it's really difficult. But we actually had, there was this song, You Spark My Heart, from the previous album, and that was played on international radio, which was not one of the rock radio stations. So it is possible, but I certainly wish there was more rock radio stations, and also like KNAC back in the day, you know, rock stations like that. And also for TV, it sucks, you know. Yeah. there's no places to, there's no program, TV programs where you can go on and play really as a live band.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, things are so different now that we don't really have MTV or much music or that kind of thing in Canada. I mean, you know, you are forced to go and find your music videos on YouTube generally.
Yeah, that's how it works.
So, yeah, I mean, it's nice that you're able to have a constant place for your music videos, but you know, I don't think that it reaches the same audience by any stretch.
Yeah. I agree. And I remember I got a flashback when you said much music, because that was like Canada's version of
that's MTV, right. Yeah.
So I remember that from when we recorded with Bob Rock in Vancouver. Well, that was good.
we need Bob more Rock. Of that stuff.
No, but I mean much music, you know, that MTV and much music, that would have been good to still have that today. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, we love Bob Rock, you know, being Canadian season. We love Bob Rock, so.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
What a guy.
Yeah, I don't know him as a guy. I just know him for his music, but I love it.
I know him as a guy. I love it. We got it all covered.
That's great.
Awesome. Well, Connie, we want to thank you for taking the time out to spend with us and talk to us about the new album and your career. And we want to give you the chance to tell everybody where they can find the new album on April 30th.
Well, where?
wherever you want.
Do a search on the internet. It should be out on all platforms where you can buy albums, really, and Spotify, of course, and all that. But we do have the vinyl, and we have the CD as well. But I don't care much for CDs, but vinyl is fun, you know. when you, again, when you hook up with fans after the shows and sign a vinyl, and you know, it's a cool thing to have a vinyl. I think I'd like to make some cassettes. That would be fun. maybe not so commercial, but it's a cool thing to do.
It's true, actually. I think there would be an interesting market for that, especially as a fan. I mean, you might not wind up being able to listen to it, because I don't think I have a cassette deck, but it would be neat to have for sure.
Well, thanks for having me. You guys also
have your website, and you have Facebook, I'm sure, things like that, right? People can keep up with you.
Electric Boys Official and electricboys.com. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well, like I say, love the album Upside Down. I think it's awesome, and I'm enjoying listening to it a lot. So I urge everybody to go out and have a listen when it comes out. And Connie, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and all the best to you.
Yeah, absolutely. All the best to you, and we look forward to more of your music.
Thank you. All right.
Game that everybody plays for a day.